and welcome to the KungFuology.com podcast. This is episode 4 of series 2. My name is Jake Newby, and with me, as always, is Andy Best.
Hello!
And I know we've been away for a few weeks. Those of you who live in China will obviously know that it's been Chinese New Year the last couple of weeks, so things are kind of shut down. There's not really been much going on. Some of us, i.e. me, actually had to work through Chinese New Year, but for most people it was a holiday. Andy, you had a bit of time off.
Yeah, I did. I didn't go anywhere, and what I did is, this is kind of a buzzword right now because of environmental issues. No groaning out there, no groaning. But I had what's called a staycation. Now, for those of you who don't know what a staycation is, you know, these...
Break it down, Andy.
I will. Go on. I will break it down, y'all. So, I should just stop that. So, a staycation obviously sounds like you're staying somewhere instead of going somewhere, because in this age of environmental degradation, carbon footprints, and the renewed responsibility that we all need to take for the environment, flying all over the place on cheap jets is bad for the environment. And this sort of buzzword staycation means that you kind of like, you have your vacation in your city. You stay at home and you do things with your family or your friends, and you look around the place where you live, you know. And not only is that good for the environment, but it's good for you because, you know, you work, you're stressed, you need a break, you've got like your high blood pressure, your heart attacks coming on. And then you get like 10 days here where everyone's traveling and it's almost as stressful as working. And this staycation is your chance to really relax. Now, I live around Dingxi Road, right, which is right in the heart of our music district.
The F Visa Ghetto.
The F Visa Ghetto, yeah. Mm. But, you know, I thought I'll do a staycation because I don't really know that much about it. I went online and I found a couple of articles, you know, about Dingxi Road, and it's quite eye-opening. So I went for this staycation. I sat in the garden of a ex-colonial mansion, Cotton's on Xinhua Road. It was quite pleasant. I shot some pool and played some snooker. It's a very, very English thing, but nostalgia. I didn't even have to go to England. I could play snooker right here in Dingxi Road's billiard hall, where the staff let you do anything you want. I almost said do anything they want to you. But that's C's Bar. That's the next place on that list. And I took advantage of its central location in the F Visa Ghetto to take in a whole number of mediocre Chinese bands.
What? Mediocre? Oh, Andy Best, champion of local music. You're saying all these bands are mediocre?
I think I did, yeah.
Wow. What the fuck, man?
No, it's quite all right. I know how these things work. You know, no one really pays attention to our pod or blog. There's certainly no comments. So I'm sure if I just go, you know, right back and, I don't know, edit it out, no one's going to notice.
Are you sure? Have you seen that done before somewhere? Have you?
I'm not saying anything.
All right, then.
Not giving away trade secrets.
Fair enough. All right, well, in this Aerostream podcast, which we'll go back and edit later on, we are going to take a look back at some of the recent gigs.
I'm going to stop you, though.
Go on.
That was like what we were doing. I've even forgotten what podcast it was. You know, it's that kind of comedy that's kind of like slightly embarrassing and edgy because it's real.
Glad you stopped me and brought that back. Wow. See, it's been a few weeks, but you've missed this, right? I bet you have. Dear podcast listener. Coming up on this podcast, we are going to take a look back at some of the recent gigs. We'll look back at last weekend's, as well as a gig last Thursday, which we were slightly involved in, it's fair to say. We're going to have a chat. We're going to have a talk about the scene, a bit of a catch up on what's been going on and where the scene is going a bit. And obviously, as always, we'll take a look forward to this weekend, which is jam-packed full of musical goodness.
That's right.
So let's kick off then. Last Thursday, we had a gig at Yuntang with Candy Shop and FAF. And, were fairly involved with this one.
Yeah, it's time to put our serious hats on now. So we've been here many, many years. I certainly have been here many, many years. And we're involved in the scene and we love it and we go all the time. But yeah, myself and Jake in particular, I've never sort of strayed over into that kind of, you know, show organizing or promoting side. But we did this time because it was for a good cause. Peter, the
People for the ethical treatment of animals.
There you go.
I believe is what you're looking
for.
Yeah,
there you go. You see, this is the thing. It's just a bit odd big upping and talking about something that you did yourself. But I hope some of the listeners came. Although we got what we wanted, because it's to promote a Mandarin language website, Peter's Chinese website, 81fur.com. And we got a sort of 99.9% local audience. We saw a few of the foreign faces. We hope they were, you know, blog listeners, pod listeners, blog readers. And it was a big success.
It was a big success. I mean, it was like a cold Thursday night as well, it should be remembered.
Yeah.
And we pulled in like, you know, what?
Well, it was we counted. We're going to reuse this stat later in our chat section. But yeah, we set the limit at about 300 and we got like 276. Something.
Not bad. Yeah, not bad
was,
at all.
Which was pretty good. What about the bands, Jake?
The bands are great. FAF, I love these guys. I really do. I think they're a really good band. I think now, we may have said this on a pod before, but I think now they're sort of, you know, they need to make that sort of next step up. You know, I think they're starting to get a bit of a following. They've got some really good songs. They're really tight. They've got a sort of a nice kind of live show together now. I mean, they were the support band. So obviously they weren't going to play a full set, but I'm not sure they actually have enough material to headline a gig yet. And I think that's possibly the next step. You know, they need to sort of keep going and, you know, keep going at the pace that they're going at. They've developed quite rapidly already, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned before that when they played, when they opened for the Battle of the Cores gig, they actually played six tracks as opposed to the usual four. It's not that they can only play four songs, that they're usually opening a multi-band bill because they're kind of new and they don't sort of see themselves as this, they're very humble, you know,
they're
not like pretending to be something they're not yet in this stage of the development. But I think they can make the next step up. I mean, if they get like eight consistent songs together, I'm sure, I mean, I know from going to these gigs that people would support them headlining a gig, local support.
Yeah.
Would be there.
I think it's interesting. I think their sound right now, I think, is really tapping into what a lot of, you know, what we're seeing sort of turning a lot of people on in the local scene at the minute. I just really like them. I think they've got a really infectious sound and I think, you know, they're good performers and you know, all credit to them. I'm looking forward to sort of seeing how they develop, definitely.
Yeah, and another big sort of bonus of having the kind of a more local crowd there for especially a charity event was that there was a distinct lack of like air kissing and networking and all that kind of stuff that occasionally sullies events that are for good causes. So anyway, on to Candy Shop were next.
Yeah, Candy Shop. I mean, obviously, like, you know, regular readers of the blog and listeners of the pod will know all about Candy Shop. You know, it was obvious why we chose them. They're great performers, they're a great band.
And they pull
in a really local crowd, and, you know, the real sort of target audience for this whole event. And, you know, they ticked all of those boxes on Thursday night. They pulled in the local crowd, and they gave a great show, as always. They denied my screams and yells for Ding Ding Dong at the end.
Yeah, but, that's right. I think they're almost embarrassed about that now.
Yeah.
I don't know if listeners how familiar you are with the band, but back in the day when they sort of, you know, kick things off just a little over a year ago, they had a kind of joke encore track called Ding Ding Dong, which is like a sort of, it's one of those, I'll tell you exactly what it's like, but I don't want to sing one. It's like when you're in elementary school, right, you take traditional songs or nursery rhymes or sort of pieces of music and you sing the dirty versions of them. When you're a boy, you do anyway. I'm not, you know, sure, because back in the days of elementary school, girls were like, you know, for me, like aliens, and you needed anti-girl spray against them and you never socialised.
Still are that way to me.
Still are to you, yeah.
That's why I'm here doing a podcast.
So anyway,
now.
We used to go around the playground singing these kind of dirty versions of like Christmas carols and traditional songs. And this is what this is. It's like a Chinese, Shanghainese language dirty version of Jingle Bells, right?
Yeah, it's filthy.
And at the end of the show, if they ever did an encore, the band would swap instruments.
Still play them incredibly well.
Yeah, and do this little song as a closer. And as they've gotten more and more kind of like serious and better and pulling in an audience, people still like shout out for it, but I can
people
see...
People like me.
Yeah, people like you, yeah, who just want to hear like
filth. Things
like... What's the English equivalent of that? We always used to like the filthy equivalent of... I don't even know. Bicycle Made for Two, you know, Daisy, Daisy, Give Me Your Answer, Do. I won't sing the blue version, but anyway, you know, people who like that kind of thing scream out for it. But now it almost seems like they're kind of a bit embarrassed by the whole thing, right?
Yeah, maybe. I should keep my mouth shut.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was our little thing. I don't want to go on about it too much because it was our thing and we've big upped it on our blogs quite shamelessly.
All right then.
But there was a really like big event going on the Saturday night.
Of the weekend.
What was that, Jake?
Big gig of the weekend was Saturday night down at Mau. This was the second Maybe Mars showcase in as many months. This is the third in total. So there was one last year as part of the Dre Festival. And there was one last month. And there was one last Saturday. So this is basically Maybe Mars bringing their showpiece bands down to Shanghai. Mm. They're whisking a whole bunch of them off to South by Southwest later on this month. And so this could be the last one in Shanghai for a while, or at least with those bands, I guess. Yeah. The last chance we'll get to see them here for a while. Although I noticed on Dan's blog on City Weekend that Nevin was quoted as saying they might make this a regular thing, like they want to sort of cross-pollinate the scenes, as it were, and bring their bands down.
Yeah, we've heard that a lot, but of course, some like massive event involving a blue mascot is coming up, and it's still up in the air just how many gigs are going to be on at all and which venues can avoid the drop or not. But anyway, let's not get into that now. Who played, Jake? Who were the four bands?
So we had Bird Striking, Guaili, Kasik Kars, and Avia Kubo.
Right.
In that order.
And who were you kind of excited about before we went in?
I was excited about Avia Kubo. I'm always excited about Avia Kubo. I think they're a really, really good band live.
I was excited about Guaili because I'd actually never seen them live before.
Had you not?
No.
Oh, okay.
I missed the last Yu Yintang show, and
yeah,
and you know, I hadn't really had a chance to listen to their music because they only had a couple of kind of older demos on their Douban page and their MySpace page. But right there on the, you know, about 5-6 days ago, they added a high quality song to their Douban page called Gas, which is the kind of slower track with the kind of slide guitar riffs in it. That was quite good at the show. We'll get onto that. Mm. And I heard it, and I was like, "Wow, they really rock!" And I was quite up for seeing them. But I didn't get there in time to see the first band, who were Bird Striking. So what happened there?
Bird Striking. They're kind of like mini Kasik Kars, basically. They sound very much like Kasik Kars. The lead singer guy even looks quite a lot like Sho Wang, I think.
Right.
And it, like when he came on stage during the Kasik Kars set later on to sing like or shout the chorus to like You Can Listen, You Can Talk.
It was him, was it?
It was like having Mini Me next to him. Yeah, but you know, I mean, Kasik Kars are a big band in China. They've got a very accessible sound. They're probably the band you've heard of out if you're outside of China. You know, the Chinese band you've heard of. So I mean, you know, why not copy that formula, I suppose. I mean, I'm not saying they're ripping them off or they're copying it. Just they have a very similar sound, and I think they're kind of proteges of the Kasik Kars guys.
Yeah, and I think there's two sides to this, because actually at the last one a month ago, the second Maybe Mars showcase, I mentioned that I stalked Michael Pettis, the founder of Maybe Mars, and we were talking about this, and he mentioned that it's a really positive sort of milestone in the scene that local Chinese rock and indie bands are influencing the next generation to start bands.
That's
as
true,
opposed
yeah.
to outside influences, right? And that, you can debate that point all day long, but it is significant. However you want to look at it, it is significant. And there's plenty of room in each genre for many bands, right? So it's a good thing. The other side of it is, and I was sort of feigning that I didn't know that was him because we've already talked about this in the night, but when he did come on and sing along to You Can Listen, You Can Talk, it's a bit like it doesn't necessarily do a lot for your own integrity as a band member if you sort of act as a kind of subordinate fanboy in front of all the fans you're also supposed to be playing to, I guess.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of when Brad put on Joyside at Windows Underground for their official opening. And at one point, I can't remember which song it was, obviously the popular one, but like three or four people literally all had the idea to jump on stage and sing along to their legendary track at the same time, including the band's own manager, and it was quite a bizarre sight, right? I could handle Little Punk being up there doing it because she's Little Punk, but it ended up with like four or five people around the mic, like literally pushing Bian Chen, the singer, out of the way to sing his own song. Brilliant. Anyway, and they, as I came in, I heard that they'd had technical difficulties.
Oh, yeah, the bass drum broke like after their first song or something, and then a guy came on stage with some sellotape. and tried to sort it out. No, they did actually, in fairness to Mao, they did sort it out in the end.
Well, let's
this is just a freak accident and these things happen.
Let's get on looking at the time.
All right, Gwaili were up next, and you'd been wanting to see them, so what were your thoughts?
Yeah, the first song, the sound was great. A bit later on, though, they turned it up and lost the mix. It kind of got a bit muddy when they tried to turn it up. Could be many reasons for that. I don't really want to dwell on it in the podcast, but I mean, you know, the first couple of songs where the sound was like dead on, I was like, oh, this is great. This is a sound that this is a band I want to see. And a lot of people talk up, is it Wen Jun, the singer. But she didn't really do that much. I mean, she's obviously very, very cool. She's got swagger. She doesn't have to do anything. She's got good vocal style.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, the band is, her image is a big part of the band, right? But I didn't think she did that much. And I could see that a lot of people, quite enamored more with like the way she looks than necessarily the way she behaves in the band, which is a pity, because these are really, there is a sort of like understated brilliance to this band. I mean, they play a more like new wave sort of sound of punk. They're a little bit experimental and quite a lot more musical than kind of like traditional 70s punk. And you know, there's really a lot to the band. And if you go onto the Douban page and follow the links and check out the song Gas, you'll see that they're quite an accomplished like band, and you can get a lot out of listening to them. It's not punk in the sense that you have to be there pogoing. And I was quite impressed.
Yeah, I think that's true. Like, I think Wen Jun gets a lot of attention because, you know, she drinks and smokes on stage, and shock horror, she's a girl doing that. So,
and she's stick thin and has what
the
tats. Hell?
But yeah, I mean, the real driving force behind the band, I would say, is, and his name now escapes me, which is terrible, but the bassist from PK-14, who's also the drummer in Gwaili.
Who used to be the drummer of the Subs once upon a time.
Right, I mean, I would say, is like the sort of driving musical force behind it. But yeah, I mean, I like Gwaili. I like them a lot. And then up after them, we had Cars at Cars.
You can take Cars at Cars?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a Cars at Cars set. It's pretty tight musically, you know. I mean, they know what they're doing. It was a pretty standard Cars at Cars set. I thought they played a pretty dirgy version of She Will Wait, which was a shame. But I don't know. I was more excited by the older songs, to be honest. Like Hersheng,
me too, yeah.
Mogul. They played like Hersheng, Mogul, and something else, like three in a row, and it was a real good three in a row. And then they closed out with Zhongnan Hai.
Yeah, and they were the high brilliant points of the set for sure.
And once again, they didn't play Guangcheng. Which, last couple of times I've seen Cars at Cars, I've not played Guangcheng, and that's my favourite Cars at Cars song. So.
Yeah, well, they got the new CD.
Don't even care what I think.
I know. How dare they? Anyway, shame on them.
Zhang Shuowang, if you're listening, play Guangcheng more.
Play Guangcheng, that's right.
Just saying, man. Just saying.
So I felt the same way. I thought the audience came alive when they played the ones that, the classics, but, I mean, that's obvious, isn't it? You play the songs, yeah, people know they're going to... going to come alive, despite the fact that the newer CD is obviously amazing. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Didn't like the fact that the lights people kept like shining literally floodlight strength white lights onto the crowd every time a mosh broken out. It's like, it was like, you know, we challenge you not to be self-conscious. It was really, really bizarre and odd. I don't know, you know, why they kept doing it. Now, next up's AV Occupo, which I'm going to let you talk about mainly, but except for the thing that I got very excited about. I got to admit, despite the fact that they are a great band, this was genuinely a good night, enjoyed by everyone, and they are certainly good enough to headline a big show. I just don't particularly like the kind of the style,
yeah.
Right? And I'm not too into bands like that have these sort of like retro styles on top of a bit of modern rock. I mean, it's very clever, it's very well done. But usually, I don't really like it. But there was one sort of part that really won me over. And that was actually, they debuted, I'm not sure, I couldn't find it on the internet, and I stalked Michael Pettis again, sorry Michael. It's literally sort of, it's like normally called doorstepping when you just knock on the door and open it, but I mean literally kind of almost doorstepped him when he was wandering around the crowd having a look. But they debuted, he told me, it's like they were playing the new video. And yeah. Shame. I'm not sure I even know the actual name of the song. The one where they go, poor, 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 break, 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 break. It's Break Wave, right?
Yeah.
So they debuted the video for that song, which is a kind of pastiche of sort of kung fu movies. Michael told me it was, he thought it was a pastiche of 60s sort of kung fu movies, but it's more like 80s wire work and sort of lasers shooting out your eyes and fingers type stuff. And it was very, very good. And that song and hearing the production that's on this new CD they just put out, and watching that video, I was blown away. It was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It was really good. The pity that, yeah, when they played for me, I was a bit... Yeah. But I mean, that video was... Again, I always say this, but when I watched that video for Breakwave, right? The quality of the visuals, the, you know, the joy of the creative idea and the quality of the song. And it's sort of, it's like an anthem as well. Again, if this was a country with a sort of an unrestricted and developed proper music industry where people had access to music, that would be like a smash national hit. You know, it would be a career-making hit, right? It's a real shame. But what did you think of the performance?
Yeah, I mean, I like this band a lot. I mean, like I say, they were the band I was excited to see beforehand. I think I've probably seen them do better performances, maybe. But even so, like a sort of a slightly substandard Avia Cubo show is still pretty damn good, I think, to be honest.
Right.
I just think they're really entertaining. I think they're good fun. And yeah, I think, you know, they put on a good live show, basically.
Excellent. So in general, a good showing from Maybe Mars in Shanghai. And going the other way, of course, with the Jue Festival.
Yeah.
We've got the Mushrooms are going to play their first ever
yeah.
Beijing gig. So what I want to say now, because by the time we do the podcast next week, it's underway, the festival. I'm not sure. I can't remember the exact date offhand.
Yeah, it
but
kicks
basically,
off next weekend.
If anyone's in Beijing, you know, go and see that show and let us know. Come on the blog comments or the podcast comments and tell us what you thought. We'd love to know.
Goodness knows, we've said enough about the Mushrooms as it is.
That's
so
right.
It'd be nice to get a different view, a view from the capital. Mm. I think they'll do really well. I mean, we just know what a quality band these guys are and how great they are. And I hope they'll do really well. I think they will do really well. And, you know, best of luck to them.
Yeah. So we've gone well long on the review section because we were so excited about that.
A quick chat then.
A quick chat. But now nothing... that much has happened over the whole days, although I kept hearing, you know, sound bites and quotes and comments by people, all sort of like, especially as the you know, the event that shall not be mentioned is coming up and we might have a break, you know, about, there's been a lot of talks about the scene in general, you know, Mao Live, a lot of CDs that have come out, growing audiences allegedly, and basically, you know, the state of the scene. Now, we've got a reduced time to talk about this, but the question I've written down here for Jake is the scene punching over its weight? Because the conversation that got this really going in my mind was, on Saturday night at the gig, before I went in, I was talking to Lurza, the drummer of Sonnet, and the essentially the house manager for Mao, before I went in, who's he's like a really, really nice guy, and it's very, yeah, very intelligent. You can talk to him at length about a variety of subjects, and you can always learn something interesting. And He was telling me that Sonnet have now lost their bass player.
Yeah.
And it's purely, like a lot of bands, even like, for example, the Mushrooms are their guitarist, we'll get to that. Basically, he needs to travel a lot for work. Work is busy, need to make money. And, you know, he just basically, their recent efforts to get a new CD done, generate material and go to the next level have been impossible because, you know, the bassist just can't do it. He can't commit the time. So... they then went through a period of trying to find a new bassist while they were in their kind of little hiatus, get their songwriting going. And he told me that they just couldn't find anyone suited to both the band, the playing level and their personalities or whatever. And it's just, I've heard this a lot.
Yeah.
The actual community of people within bands trying to do something and step up to the next level is actually fairly limited. And you know, I mean, maybe the listeners know or not, if you've seen a lot of these bands, that there's actually a startlingly large amount of shared members in bands these days.
Right. I mean, like... I think it was Brad was saying the other day that like the members of Bougie and Duckfire Goose, you know, they just need to start like one more band or something, and they've kind of, or everyone's sort of included there that way. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you got, you know, well, Duckfire Goose now is like, oh no, sorry, yeah, it's three quarters of them are Bougie members, right?
Yeah,
I mean, and that's just, you know, that's just one example, but I mean, they're shared members across the scene, like. There are so many people who play in sort of, you know, one or two or three bands. I mean, like next weekend, not this weekend, coming the weekend after that, is the Hell United show, right? And you've got...
Oh, there we go, yeah.
I mean, there's another example, like Chaos Mind and Six Shot. Like, there's shared members all over.
Triple Smash and Six Shots, David
right.
Chang. And exactly. Yeah, and this is a big thing. And I mean, some of it's just the usual stuff. Everyone wants to play guitar and sing, right? And like, there's always a shortage of, like, good drummers, for example. Again... Xiao Ling from Top Floor Circus is also the Mushrooms drummer. The bassist for Top Floor Circus also plays in Sonnet on guitar. And this is the other news. He said that they're going to have to let him play bass now. And he also plays bass for Pinkberry, which Lewis is the drummer for. It's like playing a word association game. Once you get going, you just don't need to stop. But basically, they're going to move him over, and then the keyboard samples and extra stuff are going to be run off a kind of a, like off samples of one of those pads the drummer has, like sort of mid pads. They can MIDI up to the samples, and he can twat the pads with his stick and let off the keyboard riffs or whatever and some loops, right? I mean, they're having to really go to kind of like use the technology to get around this, right? And the quotes you hear when you have these conversations, it just sounds like that allegedly the audiences of the scene are getting bigger than it sort of technically is. That sounds a bit odd. The other point I wanted to make before I get some opinions here, and not only off Jake and his conversation, but, you know, do come on the comments, you bastards. With your own ideas. Maybe you think this is completely full of shit. I'm happy to hear that. Is that when we did the... This is about the capacities and how many people turn out to gigs. Yuyin Tang and Mao will take as the examples. Because Yuyin Tang are the ones who've grown slowly and surely and have a definite audience. And one thing we did at the Peter show was that we were going to have this 300 limit on it because it was free. And we didn't quite reach that, but we counted everyone, you know, fairly, and we made a proper count. We didn't sort of cheat the numbers or put higher numbers on the tickets to make it look so it looked better to people coming in or anything, which, you know, has happened. And we counted everyone. We had 272 people, including the bands and their mates, a couple of extra people, probably just and our volunteers for the show, the bar staff. So about 300 people in the building. And that was one of those busy Yuyin Tang nights, but not the utterly sardined ones.
But that ridiculously was, packed, but it was nicely busy.
So right? We saw that a regular busy Yuyin Tang night was actually about 300 people. Only the legendary gigs that we talk about, the once every 2 month utterly packed gigs, are like 4 to 5 when it's sardines. But we noticed, having counted, that 270 was like a reasonable, busy, a regular Yuyin Tang night, which is not that many people in such a large city. And then you go over to Mao, and actually, the gigs featuring local bands we had to pay, and not that many more people. And the ones where they have packed it out, like a couple of these Maybe Mars ones and the Pet Conspiracy gig, were like Splitworks gigs as well. And there's no offense to these people, but they needed expats. They needed a big expat attraction to fill out the rest of the spaces, right? I mean, there's been more shows, but it's been a stretch, right? I mean, when the larger venues have filled it, it's been with the kind of the sport, the foreign legion, should we say. When it comes to the sort of the core scene, the regular people around the city, the new young audience, the students and that, you know, actually it's kind of like leveled off a bit, and we're kind of stretching. I mean, do you have any thoughts on any of this?
I think with the band members thing, I think it's partly a problem of that they don't really have anywhere to go almost. Do you know what I mean? When the bands develop and when they reach a certain level, I think it's very hard for them then to sort of, I mean, you know, like you say, with Avia Cubo, like if you lived in a different society, that could have been a breakthrough hit and they could have gone huge, right? But it's not going to happen. So then where do you go after that? Like, how do you keep these guys in the bands? You know, they're under a lot of pressure from like family and what have you to sort of get married and settle down and get good jobs. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, if they can't make money out of it, if they can't make a career from it, I mean, where do they go? And I think that's why you see a lot of turnover in a lot of these bands, is that people, you know, when it comes down to the end of the day, if they have to choose between their career and the band, 9 times out of 10, they're going to choose career.
Yeah, exactly. And as long as there's no sort of national scale, large change on sort of policies about industries in general and arts and culture, and we can't talk about some of this stuff directly out for fear of getting in trouble with the policemen. Without major changes there, maybe it's as big as it will get in Shanghai for now, right? And but what I want to know is, we're talking about, you just mentioned the point that it's largely down to, you have to make money, and to a point, if you can't go full time, you know, you reach this limit, right? So what about for the past like year and a half, 2 years? I mean, it's been going on longer, but for the past 2 years, there have been a lot of efforts on behalf of large modern ad agencies and PR companies to push this kind of sponsorship model, right? Where you get people on ads and you sponsor events and you get, I don't want to say the word, creatives. Let me get a drink. I hate using that word to just like, it's a word which blankets in all people who do arts and music into sort of like ad agency employees, and it's sickening. But, you know, but anyway, you know, to get them jobs within the ad, in the sort of corporate world, the ad world, right? And that here's the thing, that, you know, it's no secret that I find it dodgy ground, to say at the least, morally, right? And that I don't think it helps at all. But here's the thing. I mean, whenever you bring this up or challenge people about it, the answer you hear, and fair enough, you know, I'll accept counterpoints. The counterpoint is always, but Andy, we're just going practical here, because bands need money to do anything. So it's like, it's enabling, right? This will allow the bands to make more art generally, to make a bit of money. And as long as there's no other option, then that's an option. They're pulling the real politic card, basically. So what I want to know is, a couple of years after all this has been going on various scales, be it a Converse ad, a Converse tour, be it a Pepsi TV show, be it Puma sponsoring a Yu Yin Tang night, I don't know, it's all kinds of projects, be it someone getting a job on an ad via, you know, Neochar Edge or something, you know, something's been featured and they've gotten a job, you know, nothing wrong with that in principle, but, you know, when I just say it out like that, has it had an impact? Have any bands been able to go full time? Has anyone gone up to the next level?
Yeah.
What's your assessment? I mean, have any of these projects come to fruition?
Well, I mean, looking around, you got to say no. I mean, look at the bands who have been involved on those projects that you mentioned, on the Converse thing, and I mean, I don't know if it's made a really that big a push in terms of their appeal and things. All right, maybe more people. Slightly more people are aware of like PK14 and Quincy Big Shark and people like that. But I mean, I guess it's always going to be a gradual change anyway. But I really don't. I mean, has it actually?
Well, has anyone become full time? I mean, what about Quincy Big Shark, right? Because they were on the Love Noise tour, right?
Mm.
Which, I mean, I don't want to be mean, but yeah, I know Archie Hamilton, Splitworks, you know, you organised it, and together with whatever ad agency it was, maybe Whedon and Kennedy, right? And,
I'm not sure.
Was it Whedon plus Kennedy, right? The official little sign there. But anyway, the point is that they organised this, and I know from speaking to Archie Hamilton, who I know, that he's passionate about music and genuinely wanted something for the bands, right? But at the end of the day, I mean, it's a cool story. They got like four or five cities in, then the police caught up with them at Xi'an. It was close to the Olympics time and that, right? But I mean, the end result of that, mainly, it was actually a fairly small tour, it wasn't like huge rocking 500 people packed in gigs, right? I mean, it was fairly successful, but it was more successful for Converse in producing all their wallpaper, right? And I mean, I know that Quincy Big Shark went on, did this joint video project for the song Let's Play, where they had an interactive write the lyrics campaign. Yeah. It's a big cons advert. And I watched that video finally, and it was just like, compared to, I mean, you had Quincy Big Shark, who came out and broke through from nothing on their own momentum, on the strength of their CD and their cool performances, and had all this buzz about them. And now they've come kind of down again, I think. That Let's Play video is like a massive step backwards, isn't it?
Ish. But then, I mean,
yeah, exactly.
But then what is, I mean, then where do you...
They were a real
you...
it band when they broke through by themselves.
But then what would be successful for those things? If you said... Mm. If
I mean,
say,
are they full-time
right.
now? Has that Converse work allowed them to be a full-time band?
I'm not sure.
Not including their sort of like gig money in it?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. But what would be successful with those if the Converse tour and everything sort of led to them suddenly, I don't know, having much larger gigs or like doing stadium type tours like the sort of pop bands? I mean, how much is it realistically going to change in that sort of short space of time?
Well, also, a couple of people tried to take it all the way, like that project called The Factory, right? Where they had a studio and they decided to bring people in and allow them to record their material and develop for free, and then pitch their songs to the ad company who sponsored the whole deal for use in jingles and stuff, right? And of course, even saying that just sounds horrific. But I mean, let's get away from my, you know, opinions on it and just say, did it work as a model? I mean, I know this because I blogged the fact they closed down, right? But I mean, yeah. In the meantime, did anyone get a gig on an ad and make like a shitload of money or anything?
Not that I know of. I mean, and then
maybe they did, and we
correct,
just don't.
Yeah,
know.
I mean, correct us if we're wrong, but I don't recall seeing anything about
that. I mean, did that year or so they were operating produce a band who are now still gigging due to the exposure they got from a project they produced in that studio? Maybe we just don't know. Come on the comments and tell us if we just don't know, by the way, people listening.
Definitely. Go on.
Yeah, the other point was that if we agree that, you know, it's been steadily growing, but you need the Foreign Legion to pack out these bigger gigs, and it's kind of, it's hit a little bit of a plateau. You know, it's not bad. We don't think it's going down. We don't think that the scene's bad, but it might be sort of, you know, promoters and people with these ideas might be getting a little bit ahead of the actual size of the scene. The last point I wanted to make, because we've got to move on here, is that Yu Yin Tang now, I mean, they had a couple of shows, like paying shows, like The Mushrooms, where it really got packed out, like over 500, and the police even got called at one point for a crush or whatever. And I've noticed now that when they do put on these gigs, that they know now that if they put on a big name Beijing band or the Thermals, who are coming in soon, or something like this, they now make the price over 50 renminbi, yeah, sometimes 80, right, for the gigs they know they can fill. And the Mao gig on Saturday was on the door, which I didn't have a choice in, because I work until 8:45. I'm knackered. I didn't even know if I could make it. It would have to be on the door for me.
Right.
It was 100, right? So prices are going up, right? But, you know, what's that going to do to the idea of expanding the scene in general, getting like younger people, especially like students and people discovering music, into like being involved and supporting the live show?
Yeah.
Is it too soon to bring in higher prices?
Yeah.
Oh, what do you think? It's the last question.
Well,
because then we'll have like 5 minutes to do all the previews.
Okay. Well, I mean, the other side of that as well is that if you're charging higher prices, then you expect a certain quality of show. And I think part of the problem as well with growing the sort of local fan base is that, okay, if kids who, you know, they're not making a lot of money, they're 100 kwai is going to be a lot of money for, you know, for some of these people out there, then, I mean, if they're coughing that up and they then get a sort of, or not as professional performance as they would, as they would want, or, you know, things kind of run on far too late for them when they, you know, they have to get back home or they have to get into dormitories or whatever, they're not going to do that again.
They're not coming back here.
Right. You know, like they're not going to, and I know Mao, like, I feel like and Yu Yin Tang, when they charge these high prices, they have to make sure that they're living up to, you know, they're setting that bar high for themselves. They have to meet that, because otherwise these kids aren't going to come back. If you go to Mao or to like Yu Yin Tang and you pay like 100 kwai or over 100 kwai for a gig and it's shoddily organized or it doesn't go off for whatever reason, you're not going to pay that again anytime soon. You know, why would you? And you're not going to go and sort of hunt out these bands, and you're not going to become part of the scene. You're just going to turn off and you're going to go and do something else.
Yeah, so
and
I mean,
then you're lost. That's it. You lose a whole.
And we
bunch
might
of
be having this big close down coming. We've got this great era in the scene right now. Why not kind of make it a celebration? You know, why not keep the prices down, because it's obviously working like that in the first part. Just get as many people as you can in. Make it as easy as possible for people to come in and go out with a bang until.
Well, and make it difficult to shut down as well. I kind of think
exactly.
The more people who are coming in and the more people who know about it and who care about these places, the harder it's going to be to shut down. All right, you know, the government, and especially in this country, if they really want to shut it down, they'll shut it down. But, you know, by growing it and by having more people who care and know about it, it's going to make it more difficult, and more people are going to be outraged and they're going to want to do something.
Right, so previews. Now, we'd actually normally stop and do the track about this time, so we're going to throw this in. We've got a triple, sort of a trifecta of shows at Yu Yin Tang to talk about first. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Jake, Thursday?
Thursday, Break for Borneo, with Stegosaurus, Miss Whale, and Gooda Boys, I think.
That's correct. And how much is that one?
It's absolutely free.
Which means, you know, much love to them.
Yeah, get on down there.
Friday,
Big Chan Diao. This is Lerds' kind of mini collective thing that he's got going. So it's Sonnet, Pinkberry, Yin, and Hama's new band. Hama's the lead singer from Second. She's got a new band called Man Ban Pai. I think I've probably said that horribly. But
no, that's exactly right. Yeah. Sonnet are, you know, post-pop sort of like clever sounding dance indie rock band.
Yeah, always entertaining live.
Yeah. Pinkberry, sort of pop punk. Yin, I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, other two bands, I couldn't tell you. I'm afraid I've not seen either of them.
Okay, great. There so there you go. We'll try and find something on the net and link them in the post. Saturday?
Saturday is like the Japanese band called Smash Up are coming over. So this is Yuki from Dragon Pizza's brought these boys over.
Okay.
And
he's involved.
He's playing as well. Dragon Pizza, yeah, Little Nature are supporting. Meh. But Dragon Pizza are also sporting. And Dragon Pizza are like, Dragon Pizza are great. Like, they're kind of like, I don't know what, speed metal? Can we say that?
Dragon Pizza call themselves metalcore. It's a kind of, they've got like slapping bass, some catchy choruses, some thrashy riffs, and it's all kind of like mixed in at a frenetic pace. And like,
I don't want to do,
yeah, the drummer
crazy.
Is Wong Lei from Loudspeaker, and he just, you know, rips out the fast beats. Yuki is like the Yuki show. He's more punk than you, and he is. Just watch the show. And Shuchi, the guitarist, sort of anchors it with his sort of technical playing. Shuchi, believe it or not, I don't even know if he knows this or remembers, but he actually sold me that Ibanez behind me out of the Blue Sugi store on Jinling Road, like literally like 5 years ago. He used to have dyed hair. I remember him.
I'm sure it was a big moment for him as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Sure he knew exactly who I was. Anyway. So that's, I mean, I'd go just for Dragon Pizza.
Yeah.
And to support Yuki, who's just a great guy.
Yeah, such a good guy. But there are a couple of gigs in other places
Live
that we
bar,
should mention
Live
as
bar,
well.
Live Bar,
Saturday afternoon, is the 33rd edition of Noise Shanghai, which is Torturing Nurses Noise Fest.
Yeah.
They've got a couple of international acts in, as ever, and, you know, Torturing Nurse, unpredictable, but always worth stumping up the 30 quid for.
Yeah, this one though starts in the afternoon at 2:30.
Yeah, it's 2:30 in the afternoon, and it's a Saturday. Usually these things are on a Sunday. They're always in the afternoons, but this one's on a Saturday. 2:30, Live Bar, yeah. Kuming Lu.
Harsh Noise is what they call themselves.
And harsh as fuck. Yeah.
Finally, we must mention this because it's also for a good cause.
Big show at the Zhejiang Dream Factory Saturday night.
Yeah.
Friday night. Friday night, right?
Uh oh.
Crap. Yeah, Friday night it is. It's Friday night, and Zhejiang Dream Factory. It's a benefit gig for victims of the Haiti earthquake. Duckfight Goose, Monroe Star, Lions of Pushi, Uyghur, Wayne's Basement.
And I think that's it.
Studio 188 or something as well, maybe. Right. There's a whole crap load of bands playing.
And of course, we're
and
racing.
It's a great cause,
yeah.
So yeah. Seriously, get out there, support them.
We're racing through these, but of course, you'll be able to link from the blog to the exact details of these gigs. And next week, don't forget, we'll have the pod next week, but some of these things will kick off. Next week is going to be big as well. Make sure you do listen to the pod and check the blogs, because the Dwer Festival kicks off. And it midweek, so we might, you know, not do this until it started. So make sure that you also follow our link to their lineup. And of course, what we're especially looking forward to, the Hell United.
Yeah.
1 year anniversary.
Yeah, Saturday 13th, 1 year anniversary of Hell United at Mao Live House.
And I'm sure we'll preview that
properly in the next pod. That was smooth. Right.
Now.
Song to play us out with?
Yeah, now. My favourite ever Chinese band, The Subs. Just in the middle of, they finished doing the recording of their fourth CD. The first three being Subs Life, Down, and We Haven't Entered the 21st Century. So they're coming out with their new CD, and fingers crossed, we don't know for sure yet, playing Shanghai as part of a tour for it. God, I hope so. They are just the best. We love them. And, you know, every time Tim Anderson of Mortal Fools and Resist once said to me after the Windows Tembo gig that every time they play Shanghai, they raise the bar for everyone. And that is exactly right. And that's what we want. Come back, you know. Come back and do it again, please, as soon as this new CD is done. So this song is called The Man, because you know how much we like sticking it to The Man, by The Subs from their CD Down. Any closing remarks?
Not really, just, you know, the pod's back. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.